1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the program. In just a few moments, Josh Planos will join me. He's a contributor, 538.com, Washington Post, does some stuff for Fancy Stats there and some other online things. We'll talk with Josh about college football, NFL, and maybe a little bit about NBA, too. Want to get you caught up with a few things. Second District Girls Soccer Tournament results. Parker Greer, the double hat trick, 6 goals. She's now the all-time goals leader at Murray High School, breaking Lydia Grogan's record. Murray rolls on to the semifinals with a 10-0 win over Mayfield. The Murray boys not as fortunate. They lost to Mayfield on penalty kicks 3-2. Mayfield moves on to face Marshall County tonight. Murray plays Graves County today. First District Soccer Tournament, McCracken over Ballard Memorial, 10-0. Tillman over St. Mary, 6-0. Fifth District Girls, Trigg County wins a penalty kick shootout over Crittenden County, 3-2. And the Trigg County boys won the championship in the district over Lyon County, 2-0. District volleyball last night over at Callaway County High School. Marshall County sweeps Murray, 3-0. Christian Fellowship beat Callaway, 3-2 in the second district. McCracken swept St. Mary. Tillman defeated Community Christian Academy, 3-2 in the third district. Graves over Ballard, 3-0. And in the fifth, Trigg County moves on, 3-0 over Livingston Central. Murray State volleyball team taking home a pair of OVC honors yesterday. Rachel Justino named the Offensive Player of the Week, and Becca Fernandez claiming Defensive Player of the Week honors. Murray State 9-9 overall, 3-3 in the league, but they've been hot lately. They'll try to extend their winning streak at Tennessee State Friday night and then Belmont Saturday afternoon. The Phoenix Suns put up 40 points in the first quarter. They beat the Warriors 117-109 in preseason play at Golden State. Former racer Isaiah Cannon, 7 points and 5 assists, and Kemba Walker had a team-high 20 points to lead the Hornets to a 110-104 preseason win over the Bulls in Charlotte. Former racer campaign, 2 points on 1 of 5 shooting. The Predators will welcome the Calgary Flames to Bridgestone Arena for their home opener tonight, the start of a 4-game homestand. Josh Planos joins me right after this.
It's an NFL doubleheader on Sports USA. First, we head to the Sunshine State as the Chicago Bears, with Khalil Mack leading the defense, head to Miami to face Tannehill and the timeless Frank Gore. Then, it's off to the Music City as Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens square off with Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans.
5 yards and a Tennessee touchdown.
Bears at the Dolphins, then Ravens at the Titans, this Sunday on Sports USA.
Coverage begins Sunday morning at 11:30 on WNBS. Welcome back to the program. As promised, Josh Planos, 538.com contributor, joins us, and we're going to start with college football. And last week, we saw College Game Day there at the Cotton Bowl. I thought they were in to watch Oklahoma roll Texas, and that certainly didn't happen. Texas, kind of a head-scratcher. We were, I think, on our way to a game, listening to a lot of that, and Texas wins 48-45 in a shootout. I just was stunned that Texas is able to pull that off, but they did. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the rise of Sam Ellinger is a real phenomenon, and I mean, I think Texas has a lot to be excited about. If they hadn't had that, you know, week one hiccup against Maryland, you know, we'd be talking about them, you know, potentially crashing the college football playoff. And even now, I mean, it seems like quite a jump, but they have, you know, they're going to have the resume if they run the table the rest of the season. They've already got 3 top 25 wins over USC, TCU, and Oklahoma. They looked, you know, rather dominant offensively, which is, of course, why Oklahoma parted ways with defensive coordinator after the game. But, you know, it's been a while since we've been able to say that about a Texas team, that they can kind of be head and shoulders alongside, you know, some of the elite teams in the country. So I'm sure that there's a lot of excitement in Austin this week, and probably for the rest of the season to come, because, you know, Texas looked like they were able to withstand every counterpunch that a really, really good Oklahoma team had on Saturday to win the Red River Shootout. A
couple of games in the SEC that may impact the national championship picture. First of all, Florida. They lost to UK a few weeks ago at home, so things didn't look good. But they haven't lost since and picked up a huge win over LSU, 27-19. And that certainly dashes LSU's championship hopes at least a bit, although it is a quality loss. What's the key to Florida's resurgence all of a sudden?
a dominant defense. I think they're getting back to their, you know, their roots. I mean, when you talk about the old, you know, Tim Tebow and Urban Meyer Florida teams, those teams were elite offensively, but this team seems to be doing it rather well with its defense, holding opponents in check. It made Joe Burrow's life pretty miserable on Saturday, and you know, what a phenomenal turn of events. Like you said, you know, after you lose that game to Kentucky that everybody talks about because it breaks this, you know, historical streak, you just start rattling off these wins. I know the you know, win over Mississippi State wasn't a blowout win, but it was still a, you know, it was a touchdown victory on the road against a ranked opponent. So they've really, you know, seemingly turned the corner on their season. And if they keep playing defense like this, there's no reason to think they can't, you know, compete with most of the teams left on their schedule, except for, you know, maybe Georgia, who they play on the 27th.
Kentucky trying to go to 6-0. They go to College Station, take Texas A&M to overtime, and this is an Aggies team with losses only to Clemson and Alabama. Kentucky unable to win, losing in overtime 20-14 during that final stretch. Benny Snell, their best player, didn't touch the ball. A lot of criticism coming out of that. What does this do to Kentucky's hopes of having a magical season?
You know, it's understandable that that criticism is being levied. I mean, Benny is that good. I saw him on, you know, SportsCenter last week. Seems like a really, you know, stand-up guy. You know, and I think that's just really disappointing. I kind of wanted the Kentucky storyline to continue for at least a few more weeks, if not the rest of the season. But you're just not going to win games in the SEC when you, you know, only have 8 first downs and or 2 of 13 on third downs. Texas A&M's defense, I thought, was rather good in the game. I thought Kentucky really shot, you know, itself in the foot a lot of the time, but it sure seemed like A&M's defense was better than advertised. And, you know, maybe we should have expected that given that they, you know, Alabama only scored 45 points on them, you know, in that loss, that the defense is, you know, pretty good, because that's incredible numbers by Alabama standards. But you know, it's tough for Kentucky. Obviously, they wanted this to be a magical season, and, you know, they still have some very winnable games left on the schedule. Again, you know, they play Georgia, so, you know, that's going to be an uphill climb. But, you know, a lot to build off for sure. And if nothing else, it's great that, you know, Kentucky can be excited about football again.
College Football Hall of Fame coach Frank Beamer will be in Murray this week. The former Racer coach helped build Virginia Tech into a national power that at least contends for a national championship year in and year out, and at least a conference championship, if not that. They've really been up and down, and it was more down this time. I thought, you know, if they lose to Notre Dame, it's going to be a close game, but Notre Dame able to pull away 45-23. Is that more about how good Notre Dame is, or how maybe bad Virginia Tech can be?
I think it's more about Notre Dame. I don't think Notre Dame's getting a ton of credit right now because it's just a different team with, you know, Ian Book at quarterback. We talked about this last week that, you know, obviously making a quarterback change is going to alter, you know, a team's complexion each and every time a decision like that is made. But they have just routed teams since Book has been injected as the starter. And, you know, they've put up at least 38 points in each of the last 3 weeks. Obviously, they went to Blacksburg and just did a number on Virginia Tech, but a lot of that is Book, his accuracy. They've got the run game going with Dexter Williams. He nearly had 200 yards on the ground. So there's a lot of, to be excited about for Notre Dame. Virginia Tech, I think it's going to be a building year, but I still really like this defense despite the kind of shellacking it took this last weekend and obviously the you know, huge hiccup against Old Dominion. But, you know, they kind of, you know, they've gotten the really tough games out of the way, at least on their regular season schedule. And, you know, if they can take care of business at the end of the year against Miami, I'm sure that, you know, folks would consider this to be a productive year.
Yeah, no kidding. Georgia and LSU this week. Georgia, this gauntlet of a schedule they have. They had Vandy last week. Yeah, they're supposed to thump them. They did. They have to go to LSU. They're home against Florida. They're at Kentucky. And then they're home against Auburn. They win these four, and they're in a really great spot. But this is going to really be tough starting this week with an LSU team licking its wounds after losing to Florida.
Yeah, like you said, Neil, both of these teams have just a gauntlet to run through the, you know, the rest of the month and into next month. I do not envy that schedule in the slightest. But this should be a, probably a drag out fight because obviously you're getting a really upset LSU team who is probably, pretty flustered after last week's loss. But they have to correct it immediately because, not only does Georgia have the tough schedule, but LSU plays Mississippi State and then Alabama the following week after this weekend. So it's really going to set the tone for the rest of the season. This is a great opportunity to kind of take a watermark for the rest of the season or where the season is currently. And I think we should get a terrific matchup this weekend.
There is a big Pac-12 game, and this is a conference I've yet to figure out. Now, Washington, there's no surprise. They're 3-0 in the league. Colorado, the only other unbeaten team, but Washington playing at Oregon this week. But beyond Washington, I can't figure the league out at all. Washington with a big challenge, though, this week playing at Oregon.
Yeah, what a great opportunity for Washington to prove that last week's, 7-point win was just kind of a hiccup because, UCLA is not a real talented opponent right now. But, and it seems like style points matter so much these days that really it's been a tough year for the Pac-12 in general. I mean, people don't think Colorado is, all that competitive, despite them being the only undefeated team left in the Pac-12. So, a great opportunity for Oregon also to exercise the demons of that kind of late end-of-game loss to Stanford, which was so, inexplicable when it happened. I think that Oregon might be the most talented team out of the North, despite having lost that game and only being 1-1 in conference play. But they'll have to prove it this weekend, and I'm sure we'll get plenty of points. It's kind of the Oregon and Pac-12 MO. So we'll see who comes out on top.
One other Big Ten game that involves two ranked teams, Wisconsin. They've rebounded fairly well with their disappointing loss to BYU, who's fast fading. They will play at Michigan this week, but this has big implications for each of these teams.
Huge. Absolutely a huge, monster matchup. I think that, like you said, that loss to BYU just doesn't make any sense. It was a home game. I got to see this rushing attack last weekend when they, picked apart Nebraska, and it's dominant. I mean, that offensive line just pushes the D-line 5 yards off the line of scrimmage, what seems like every single snap. And so anytime you're going to have an offensive line like that, regardless of the skill you have in the backfield, you're going to put together a solid rushing performance. And then you pair that with Jonathan Taylor, who's, as good as they come. And it's a really lethal team. If they can kind of get out of their own head, seems like sometimes they're second guessing the play calls. But Michigan again, that's another team that I think kind of started slow, against Maryland and had to really kind of hit the gas in the second half to turn that into a rout. Michigan's another team that both of these teams really are teams that can compete at the highest level if they would just get out of their own heads. It seems like they kind of have paralysis by analysis. With the play calling sheet. So hopefully this weekend we get, a good matchup that we all, anticipate, and, the Big Ten can put on a show in front of a national audience.
On to the NFL, and I want to talk about last night, Drew Brees with his record-setting performance, a 43-19 win for New Orleans over Washington. With his records, do you rank Drew Brees as a top 5, top 10, top 3 quarterback in NFL history? What's your take on Drew Brees?
I think top 10 seems fair. Obviously he has a lot of room for improvement for the rest of his career. He can obviously jump a number of spots in my meaningless rankings, but I think that he's as skilled as we've seen, certainly at quarterback. I mean, people always talk about having the right build to be a quarterback in the NFL, and he is such an outlier given that his head is cocked at what seems like a 20 degree angle, or like a 120 degree angle rather, to see over the line of scrimmage because he's short and, he's not, as tough as say like a Cam Newton, but yet, there are highlights of Drew Brees, putting his head down and, spinning off a tackler, and, he's got a rocket for an arm. He just seems to fly in the face of a lot of like, preconceived notions about what a quarterback should look like. And, I think that's been as impressive as anything to watch over his career, is that he never really, sold himself as something other than who he was. And, he's just been dominant, you know, for as long as I've been alive. It seems like every single year he's throwing for, you know, 400 yards, you know, each week. And so, of course, you know, he was eventually going to get that record. And that was a special moment last night, truly. As Joe Tessitore alluded to, you know, he came into a city that really needed a hero, and he was absolutely that for so many kids. So it's great to see a guy like that, you know, have a moment like that to kind of crystallize his career.
This past week, we went in with two unbeaten teams. We still have them. Kansas City, they didn't get a really great fantasy performance from Patrick Mahomes, but they beat Jacksonville 30-14. And at the end of the day, that's all they wanted out of him.
Yeah, and it was much more of a rout than that, I felt. You know, in watching the game, it really did seem like, you know, the interceptions kind of marred the performance, but that's only because we're so accustomed to him just not turning the ball over at all. He really is, it's uncanny, that kid's ability. I saw him throw, it was an incompletion, but it was like a 50-yard bomb, and it just looked so easy for him. And I know that these guys are the best in the world at what they do. You know, there's no league that eclipses the NFL in terms of, you know, football talent. But it's just, it's incredible what this guy does week in and week out. This is a dominant team. I mean, they really did dominate what is, you know, one of the best defenses in the league. And even if it was a home game and even if it was during the regular season, I think everybody should be terrified of the Kansas City Chiefs, because it would take a historic fall off for them to not be in the Super Bowl this season.
And they get a big test this week, though, playing at New England, don't they?
They do. It should be great. I mean, it seems like only yesterday that people were talking about the Patriots being, you know, down and out, and yet here they are having, you know, strung together two, you know, kind of dominant wins. It should be a great opportunity for Mahomes to test his, you know, his patience and his poise in a hostile environment. Obviously, that's a, you know, a really tough place to play, but I think that this should be you know, one of the best matchups of the week, and hopefully it delivers.
The Rams game, it was a little closer than that, but they're still unbeaten, 33-31 at Seattle, just coming away with the win on the road. That's always big in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, it seemed like by the end of it, you know, Jared Goff didn't really have anybody to throw to, because everybody was out there. Everybody out there was getting injured. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a great opportunity to, you know, talk about Todd Gurley. I mean, people are kind of sleeping on him, but he's been, you know, he had three touchdowns again this week. I don't know if there's anybody who's better from you know, 5 yards in than Gurley. I mean, he's got the speed, he's got the explosiveness, the power. He was kind of doing it all. So a hard-fought win. Obviously, it's tough to win in Seattle at any point, regardless of how good the Seahawks are. But the Rams took care of business and, you know, move on to the next one.
This week, a shameless plug here, our NFL doubleheader on WNBS, Chicago at Miami. Looking really forward to that one. And then we'll follow that up with Baltimore at Tennessee. Will there be a touchdown scored in that game? Maybe just field goals.
It might end up being field goals. Anytime Baltimore's playing, I'm actually frankly hoping that it's field goals, because Justin Tucker can, you know, hit from anywhere inside 70. So personal preference would be a field goal battle.
Okay. And Chicago, Miami, the Bears really get a big test, but this is a monster game for both of these teams.
Yeah, and Chicago's had a, you know, full week to get ready for this one. Obviously, it's in Miami, so you know, you never really know what kind of effect that'll have, other than it'll almost certainly benefit the Dolphins. But I really like Chicago in this one. That defense is disruptive. I think they have the potential to make Ryan Tannehill's life miserable. And I'm sure that's what they're preaching all week is, you know, if we can just take care of business on our end, you know, Trubisky won't need to throw for six touchdowns again to get us a win. That defense is good enough where, you know, if you get a single touchdown out of your quarterback, you can, you know, have a realistic chance at winning. And, you know, there are a few defenses like that in the league. So I would expect the Bears to get, you know, to continue on their hot streak, make it four in a row.
Before I let you go, the NBA will join us next week. We'll have games actually being played, I think, next Thursday. But one development for the Spurs, and it wasn't a good one this week, Josh.
Yeah, DeJounte Murray is the Spurs, you know, starting point guard. He was last season as well, but this season he was really primed for, you know, a breakout year. if for no other reason than he no longer has to, you know, play second or third fiddle to anybody. I mean, you know, Kawhi Leonard's gone, Manu Ginobili's gone, Tony Parker's gone. He was really, I mean, he's destined to be the point guard for the team moving forward, and yet he has a torn right ACL, which means he will miss almost certainly the entirety of the season. And that's a really devastating blow for a team that's kind of short on talent. LaMarcus Aldridge is clearly good. You know, they've got good pieces, but this team cannot compete without this guy. He's that good already. And what's really unfortunate is, you know, the rest of the league was so excited to see kind of what he was going to be able to do this year after, you know, what seemed like a really solid offseason. He was, you know, dominant in the preseason. So, you know, a really tough break for the Spurs, who have kind of grown accustomed to tough breaks over the last 2 years after, you know, an unprecedented run of dominance in the league for, you know, the previous decade and a half. So best wishes to him, and hopefully he gets back soon.
All right. Josh, appreciate the input as usual and look forward to chatting with you next week. All right.
All right. Thanks for having me.
That is Josh Plinos. Ed Marlowe joins me on tomorrow's show.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.